Eclipse's Vern Rayburn answers reporters' questions. I'm Paul Platt, and this is Aero News. In yesterday's ANN special feature, we brought you a press briefing from Vern Rayburn of Eclipse Aviation, in which he announced that IS&S, Shelton, Honeywell, Garmin, and PS Engineering will all contribute components to Eclipse's relaunched Avio NG integrated flight system. Today, in Part 2, Vern fields questions from reporters on Avio NG and on delivery schedule issues.
So with that, I would like to open up the floor to any questions from everybody online.
Good afternoon, Vern. You've got quite a team there.
Thank you, Jack.
What impact will this have on your production, and what will be your production output projected for 2007 and also 2008?
Well, for 2007, our current projected output is 402 aircraft. And as I said earlier, we see no impact on this production output. In other words, we are building aircraft today with the Avidyne-based Avio, and Avidyne, as part of the separation agreement, has agreed to continue to provide equipment to us until we have the new equipment certified and installed on the aircraft. So we see no impact of this. I can't quote you a precise number of aircraft that will go out the door with the Avio, with the old version of Avio on it, but it will be less than half of the aircraft this year, and then we will immediately launch a mod program for all our customers as soon as we have the Avio NG certified, and we, as I said, will be retrofitting all of those aircraft with the new equipment. In terms of our production target for 2008, it's just under 1,000 aircraft, and for 2009, we're going to let the market tell us where we should go.
Okay, and what about your production certificate? What's the impact on gaining a production certificate for the aircraft, particularly for 135 operations?
Well, 135 has nothing to do with production certification.
Yeah, I really have two questions trying to sneak it in as one.
Say follow on, Jack. In terms of production certification, we're continuing to work with the FAA. We'll have something to say about that here in the next couple of weeks. I would emphasize, I've tried to make this point numerous times, but I'll take the opportunity to make the point once again, which is production certification is not a prerequisite to delivering aircraft. It's something that we need to get in place to be able to produce aircraft at the rate we envisioned. But right now, today, the FAA is here examining aircraft, inspecting aircraft, and issuing the C of A directly under production, under a concept or under regulation that's actually called production under type certificate. So production certification is not something we require. It's something that we need to get to ramp, and we're working with the FAA to that end. I would note that Mooney Aircraft, for instance, worked without a production certificate for nearly 50 years before they finally did get one. So it's certainly a doable approach. It's not the approach that we want to do, and we will resolve this here in the near future. In terms of 135, the initial aircraft that will be delivered with the current Avio system are today 135 compliant with one solitary exception, which is a independent standby third AHARS, or third heading attitude reference source. Today, we will deliver those aircraft with a mechanical third AHARS installed. The irony is all the aircraft actually already have a third solid-state crossbow AHARS installed, but because we cannot channel it through the Avidyne displays, we're having to install this mechanical backup. When we go to Avio NG, we will then have a complete third independent source, which is already actually certified. The AHARS itself is actually already certified and TSO'd and certified in the airplane. I should be clear on that. And that will be displayed on the MFD just like we've already shown. So there'll be a small number of initial aircraft here that for 135 operation, principally day jet, they will have a mechanical one installed in the instrument panel. We'll ultimately remove that and channel the data on the data bus from the already installed third solid-state AHARS up to the instrument panel.
Pretty good. I'm going to take a little vector over here and talk about the aerodynamic improvements and the window fixes. Can you address those issues, too?
The aerodynamics improvements, nothing. There's no new news there, except that we're in the final stages of certification. We've demonstrated the aircraft. We have met our performance goals. In fact, we've exceeded our performance goals. We're seeing it now in aircraft flying every day. We're very, very comfortable with that. We're in the final stages of getting the certification done on that, and as we've previously announced, we will be starting to retrofit aircraft most likely sometime in late April or early May. In terms of the windshield, we have the fix. We have not sent that out as a service bulletin as yet. We will be sending it out as a service bulletin in approximately 30 days, and that will remove the inspection criteria. It will be a relatively minor change to the windshield, and it's something we've been working with Nordam on, and we've got the fix all done, and we're just working through the final certification of it now.
Eclipse actually does all the integration of all these pieces of hardware themselves, right? These companies that you outlined today or you named today are not actually working together on this with one another.
Yes, that's correct. Well, I mean, when you say not working with each other, this is a complex of an integration issue. We just don't do it all. We work with every of the companies. They actually meet, and they work with various components. So there is a lot of interaction going on, but Eclipse manages the integration process and from an engineering standpoint writes the specs and writes the requirements from an integration standpoint, and then we also do the testing. From a pure testing standpoint, all these components are individually TSO'd, and then separately after they're TSO'd, we run through a certification test on an integrated system. This is what's called a complex system by the FAA. And so we do our own set, our own level of testing at the systems level in addition to the individual component level.
Okay, okay. And one other quick question is, do you have any idea when more deliveries are expected?
Very soon.
Not naming a specific date at this point, huh?
Nope, not more anymore.
Okay. All right, well, thank you, sir.
We'll keep you informed, though.
All right.
Two quick questions. How long is it going to take to retrofit all the new avionics systems once you're ready to do that? And where is that work going to be done?
When you say how long, do you mean fleet-wide or individual aircraft?
Well, individual aircraft.
Individual aircraft, it looks like the retrofit period is going to be somewhere under 10 days per airplane, probably even be less than that. We don't have hard numbers right now because we haven't done it, so we want to make sure that we know those numbers before we start quoting them. But just as a point of reference, it does not require a major modification to the wiring harness in the aircraft, which is a fairly complex harness. It does not require removal and replacement of that wiring harness. There are some structural changes in the instrument panel and some mounting brackets behind the instrument panel. But one of the criteria as we went through this process was try to make this from both a mechanical and electrical standpoint as close to plug and play as we possibly could. Where we will do it is we will be doing it in our service centers and here at Albuquerque. My guess is it will take us the better part of the second half of this year after we get it certified to cycle all of the aircraft through the process. Then for people which will be a much smaller subset, that will be doing the aero mods at the same time, we estimate that that's probably going to be about a 30-day downtime for the airplane. As I say, that's a subset of the people that will have the Avio mod because we will be shipping aircraft with the aero mods before we ship aircraft with the Avio mods.
Vern, you mentioned that you're going to do about 400 aircraft this year, about half of which will have the Avidyne system installed initially. Is that just the way you've outlined it? What I'm trying to get to is, do you think a lot of the customers who are due to receive airplanes are going to opt to wait and get the NG system rather than getting the airplane on the original schedule with the Avidyne installed?
You made a slightly incorrect assumption that it would be half the aircraft with the Avidyne system. I said it would be in the first half of the year. But the production ramp is such that, like all production ramps, it accelerates in the second half of the year. So there will not be half of the aircraft delivered this year with the Avidyne system. It will be, I'm not prepared to quote a number because, you know, we're still making sure that we stay on the schedule, but it would be somewhere in the vicinity of significantly less than half of the aircraft delivered this year. Specifically in terms of customers wanting to wait until they get the new system, we haven't seen that yet. We're certainly willing to work with customers, but frankly, all of our customers that are getting the aircraft in the first half this year have been waiting over 6 years, and they just want the damn thing right now. So I think that we're not going to see too many people waiting, and obviously for just the Avio upgrade, that's a fairly short period in the shop. The longer mod period is for the performance because that's some structural mods.
two questions. One is, will there be a cost impact for the aircraft with all these with the new avionics system?
And the second, cost or a price impact?
A price impact, sorry.
The second was
a price impact?
No. We are keeping the price steady. There is clearly some additional cost that we will be absorbing, but that's okay because we made a contract with our customers to deliver them something. We're going to do that.
But in future aircraft that haven't been purchased yet?
Well, obviously, I can't comment on future events, but, you know, we are continued and we remain committed to delivering a totally different value proposition than aviation has seen in the last 35-plus years. And I think that AVIO-NG is a significant component of that equation. Right now, I have no plans to have any kind of price increase. That's not to say life won't change.
Okay. And can you give some insight into what's taking so long in terms of a C of A for, say, the second aircraft as opposed to the one that came out end of December?
Well, all you have to do is read the Internet because we sent out a letter to our customers on Thursday last week, which showed up on most websites within about 36 seconds. So we have found the perfect distribution system for information, which is tell our customers. And it's a whole combination of things, John. It really does come down to a perfect storm of events ranging from classic, almost to be expected, startup challenges. And any time you're putting a brand new airplane into production, nothing that is not a finite problem, nothing that is going to in any shape, form, or fashion require an extensive or major redesign of the aircraft, nothing that has surprised us from the standpoint of, holy moly, how in the world did that happen, combined with we're growing like a weed right now from a personnel standpoint. And so, as usual, we're going through some very tough learning curves with folks on the production line, and that just simply says that we miscalculated on those learning curves. And so it's taking longer to bring people up to speed and see the standard mead times start to come down or the tack times come down on the aircraft. Combined with this all happening at a sort of inopportune time of the year, and there's no excuse for this. This is, you know, as I've always tried to be in this entire program, which is just being brutally honest, unlike some of the other folks in the industry, and it really simply comes down to we miscalculated on learning curves, we miscalculated on the ramp for people and the learning curve for the people, and we had some mistakes in the early designs, which we're correcting right now, none of which will have any long-term impact. This much I would go on to say, which is that I think what you're going to see is a significant number of aircraft delivered in a fairly short period of time, again, much more so than most people would expect, but we still have our challenges cut out for us, and so that's what we're spending a lot of time on here.
But what was different about that first aircraft where they were able to approve that first aircraft, but now they're not able to?
It wasn't so much that there was anything different. It was just one that got a huge amount of attention, and we were able to work through it. And then when we turned our attention to another airplane, we just found some of problems that had been built into the aircraft. Keep in mind, the first three or four aircraft were built as much as 8 months ago. And so there was not the uniformity, there was not the consistency of a manufacturing process 8 months ago that we have now. And that's one of the reasons I have a high level of optimism as we work through these early aircraft, which we are inspecting the conformity and the quality into. In other words, we're not willing to compromise on these first airplanes. As we found these problems, none of which are any shape, form, or fashion safety of flight issues, rather than do the traditional GA thing, which is go ahead and push them out the door, we've kept these aircraft back and we have modded them so that they go out in a full conformity, a full performance configuration. So rather than having the typical... if you go and look at, for instance, the first 28 Citation CJs, they ended up with over 200 service bulletins to just correct early manufacturing problems. We're trying very hard not to have that level of service bulletins, and so we've made a decision. This is not an FAA issue. This is an Eclipse issue. We've held those aircraft back and made the modifications now rather than putting them in the hands of our customers so that they will have to bring them in and make the modifications. Clearly, we're not successful at that on performance and on avionics, but that's why we're picking up the tab on all that ourselves.
How does the form factor of the IS&S displays compare with the Avidyne displays? And also, what's your schedule for installing hardware and to start the test program for that?
In terms of the form factor as viewed by the pilot, there's no change whatsoever. They are identical. In terms of the form factor behind the instrument panel, Avidyne had used an approach of everything was integrated into a box. So, for instance, the PFDs were very, very large and deep because not only did they have the display hardware in there, they also had all of the radios in one single box. That was an approach that Avanade wanted to use. It's an approach that had advantages and disadvantages. In the case of the ISS, they're very, very thin displays. All the heat disbursement is done by heat sinks on the back of the display. I think the PFDs are about an inch and a quarter thick, and the MFDs about an inch and a half thick. So they're very shallow, which is given as the new space behind the instrument panel to mount the new radios and transponders and audio equipment. So, again, from a pilot standpoint, from a user standpoint, zero difference. From a mechanical standpoint, it is a different kind of installation, and it's actually kind of an easier installation because now you can take the displays off the front of the panel and reach back and get to all the radios, which are installed in quick removable cans. So the maintenance is actually much easier on the airplane now than it was with the Avanade displays.
Okay, and how about the schedule for installing test hardware?
We already have test hardware on the bench working, integrated, and the first airplane will be flying with it within about another 35, 40 days.
Okay, and the FMS software, is that the same software that is used in the Chelton Flight Logic EFIS?
Yes, sir. Bruce, do you want to comment on that any?
Yes, sir. This is Bruce. Yeah, it's the same basis for the exactly what we're flying in the Flight Logic that we have in our current production software.
Just keep in mind, what we're doing with Chelton is we're using their core system, and we're putting a new user interface wrapper around it. In other words, Chelton is a beautifully, deeply integrated flight management system into their unique displays. Just as a sidebar here, one of the really interesting challenges that I don't think we fully understood, and particularly as we started looking for replacement components, we clearly didn't understand, is that as we move towards these significantly more integrated cockpits, be they the G1000 from Garmin or the Chelton system or even the Avanade system, these things aren't just like where you can take a box out of the panel and slide another box into the panel. And in particular, one of the extreme values, and once again, I realize this is so new and it's so different that it's very difficult to have an intelligent discussion because there's really no context or no sort of referential basis to have the discussion with. But one of the real values of this integration is it smooths out the interaction of all these components from a standpoint of presenting information and control to the pilot. So when we say we're going to use the Chelton FMS, and I'm not trying to pick on Chelton, quite the opposite, this is a really good example. They've got a great system. It has more capability than almost anything else flying out there today. When you get outside of the Rockwell and the high-end Honeywell-type systems. Stand by for some really interesting things coming from more people, but I can't announce that, obviously. But when you look at how we're going to take this very capable FMS, and we're going to make it look like Avio, and so the UI, whether it's you're maintaining an engine or setting pressurization or tuning in radios or doing a flight plan, will be totally consistent, not only from the operation of the aircraft, but even through our Avio flight bag system, which will allow the pilot to do a lot of this stuff in an asynchronous, meaning sitting at their desk at home or in a hotel. It's a whole different approach, and it requires a whole nother level of engineering, a whole nother level of systems design, and a whole nother level of integration. So when you say it's the Chelton core, but it's going to be the Chelton core with a new suit on it, so to speak.
What about plans for TCAS in the airplane?
Plans are all there. We have the aircraft is pre-engineered for TCAS. It's the same situation. Today, anything that we put in the aircraft has to be controlled through Avio. So I can't go out and just plug in a TCAS box and put a TCAS antenna on it because then I have to change the display software. That proved to be very, very difficult with the previous vendor. Now we have a different approach to being able to do this. Some of this is you learn as you go. Some of this is different companies have different approaches. And so the net is, for instance, it's exactly why we're having to do the mechanical third AHARS, is because even though we had already certified a solid-state third AHARS that's installed in the aircraft, we couldn't get the data, we couldn't get the information displayed on the MFD. So when we're ready to install TCAS,
we're going to have to make some modification to the MFD software, to the PFD software, to control it. That process is going to be a lot easier now than it had been in the past.
You're listening to Vern Rayburn of Eclipse Aviation and the question and answer session with reporters from Monday's press briefing. We'll continue in a moment. This Aerocast is brought to you by Aircraft Engine Services, makers of the aluminum V220 and V300T engines.
Why can't your aircraft engine help you be a good neighbor wherever you fly? Automotive engineering has advanced so much over the past 30 years. Why can't an airplane engine be just as quiet and just as reliable? Well, now it can. Check out the new leaner, cleaner, and quieter V220 and V300T from Aircraft Engine Services. The V220 and V300T engines are capable of meeting and exceeding the most stringent noise regulations. The 3-to-1 propeller speed reduction unit keeps propeller tip speeds down to reduce noise. The engine management system reduces workload by providing single lever control, increasing safety and operating the engine at peak fuel efficiency. The EMS system allows the use of unleaded fuel, eliminating the need for reliance on avgas. In addition, the option of using automotive fuel can result in a significant cost savings. The V220 and V300T engines are significantly quieter and cleaner running than the existing engine designs used in today's aircraft. The AES V220 and V300T, as simple as a car's engine, but oh, so much more fun to drive. Check us out on the web at VAircraftEngine.com or call us at 321-268-3718. Aircraft Engine Services, the shape of things to come.
Shoot happens. Come on, you know it does. Even the world's top test pilots know there are in-flight situations you can't always recover from. Mid-air collision, control failure, pilot incapacitation. In severe emergencies, do what the world's top test pilots do. Use a parachute. Except, instead of having to bail out of a moving aircraft, you can have the safety of a BRS full airframe recovery parachute. BRS has parachutes for an enormous variety of aircraft, from experimental to light sport, and all the way to retrofits on certified airplanes. Shoot happens. Will you be ready when it does? Call BRS today at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com. Higher, faster, farther, safer. Those are the watchwords of Columbia Aircraft Manufacturing's new generation of personal airplanes. The Columbia 350 and 400 are now available with either an Avadyne or Garmin electronic cockpit. The new Garmin G1000-equipped Columbia 350 and 400 have just been introduced with the new ReadyPad. While the G1000 panel integrates all navigation and flight instruments into two high-resolution screens, incorporating GPS, nav, comm, autopilot, transponder, and flight director into one easy-to-use package. To schedule a demo flight in a Columbia 350 or the turbocharged 400, call 541-318-1144 or check them out on the web at flycolumbia.com.
We're back with more of this Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plack. Vern Rayburn of Eclipse Aviation is answering reporter questions about the current state of the company from Monday's press briefing.
Two questions. One is there a weight change with the Avio NG? And second question is, was this system too much for one avionics company to bite off? Is it better as a group effort?
In terms of the weight change, yes, there's a slight weight change. I don't have a hard number right now. We'll be releasing that here in about another 30 days as we finish the first installation and validate all the calculations. But there is a slight weight increase because of this. The second question is a really interesting question. The idea of everything coming from one vendor has an obvious level of elegance and simplicity. Conversely, it also means that when there is a problem, you may have some real difficulties. Best of breed versus all from one is the way I would characterize it. This is not a new problem. This is a problem that's been going on for decades in the computer industry. SAP would like for you to believe that you should buy every piece of software you ever need in your entire life from them. Oracle, on the other hand, wants to sell you software packages from 20 different companies, all of which they happen to own. Microsoft just wants you to buy Windows and buy applications from the 10,000 application vendors that do it. It's an eternal argument. It's a little bit similar to the same argument of standards versus no standards. And so I don't know that there is an absolutely correct answer. In our case, this is the best solution for a variety of reasons, ranging from what the airplane is today, because keep in mind, this is more of a retrofit program as opposed to a new design program. Second, we think at Eclipse, because of our high level of expertise in systems integration and software development, we have some ideas, and we have found some great partners who are willing to work with us on these ideas about how to use the best of breed, yet at the same time present what everybody wants to present, which is a highly uniform user interface, a highly integrated approach to control and command in the system. Some companies are capable of doing that from a systems integration standpoint. Most airframe companies aren't capable of doing this. So they would be naturally inclined to turn to the more, you know, all-in-one box type of approach. We're probably a little bit more naturally inclined to turn to the best-of-breed approach. Obviously, we've made a major strategic bet that in doing this, we can deliver a great solution, which is not to say that the other solutions available are bad. It's just we think we can deliver more value with this type of approach. But it's a really good question and one that we could probably talk about for 2 or 3 hours.
I sort of read or heard or saw the way these things are on the Internet, that you had expected to reach RNP 0.1 capability.
Right.
I don't know whether you were correctly quoted on that, but that is a rather tall order.
Sure.
The avionics suite, which you currently have, particularly in the FMS area, where you start to think about RF legs and all these other unusual things.
Yep.
What do you feel about RNP 01, and when do you think you might achieve that?
I think that anybody who isn't developing a roadmap to RMP 0.1 is really got a challenge ahead of them in terms of being able to equip their aircraft to operate in the NGATS. When will that happen?
Yes.
I think there's two sets of issues here. One is obviously the whole debate that's going on right now about when will NGATS be deployed and when will we be able to take advantage of this. And then the second is, can you take an incremental approach? In other words, can you get 90% of the value of the first phase of NGATS with 0.3 as opposed to 0.1, and what equipage is it going to take to do that? We will be making some announcements in a few months. It's one of the reasons we chose to name this NG. That was not just by happenstance. We are aligning the capabilities of the system and the expansion capabilities of the system with ultimately the NG of the air traffic control system. And we will be making some announcements about how we're going to achieve RMP. So it has always been an objective. It's always been a plan. Unfortunately, we're having to change horses, so to speak, here in midstream in terms of the vendor. We believe that we can achieve 0.1, and it is primarily a software issue. And you've got to understand my background, so when I say it's just software, that's not being de minimis or being disingenuous. It means that it's a very different kind of development process as opposed to installing new hardware in the aircraft.
Would you then feel that this is the ultimate, not the ultimate aim, but this is one of the future aims of the program to start turning out from the factory RMP 0.1 capable airplanes?
Not just 0.1, but also ADS-B and LPE. All the cornerstones and fundamental building blocks of NGATS. I think we have an obligation as an airframe company to provide, you know, an integrated solution, again, because we believe very strongly in this approach to integration, to provide that solution for our customers. And that means we will always have a high component of R&D, particularly in these areas of electronics, and we'll always probably take on the role of systems integrator.
It's just that RMP 0.1 is not waiting for NGATS. You can fly RMP 0.1 today into Palm Springs, for example.
Yes, you can. I didn't mean to say it. I wasn't trying to infer that it's worthless or there's nothing to be done.
Yeah.
But I think today we have something like 26 approaches that you can use it on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're not too frequent. Okay, thank you.
And, just as a follow-on to that, when you look at the number of WAS or LPV type of approaches that are being certified right now, that actually represents an area that I think, particularly for our customers, will ultimately provide a significantly higher level of functionality sooner. Not to say we're going to engage, if you will, in selective triage about, I guess that's redundant, but sort of triage about how we're going to get to RMP. But RMP is a system that most airplanes, certainly in this class, don't even aspire to, let alone have today, and yet it's something we are working on.
May I have a supplementary and ask about head-up displays and enhanced vision?
Sure. I love heads-up displays, and I really love enhanced vision. This is a really interesting convergence of challenges because, once again, the compute capacity is irrelevant. Meaning,
sure.
We can add as many MIPS or FLOPS or whatever you want to the system, almost not willy-nilly, but fairly easily.
Yeah.
The big challenge for us is we have a very, very severe physical constraint in terms of where to put this stuff.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Moore's Law doesn't apply to optics quite as much as it does to processors or even display technology. So we're talking with a lot of people. We've seen most of the systems that are out there today, both EVS and HUDs. I believe there's a lot of value in both of those technologies, and I think there's even a lot of value in the combined synthetic vision EVS approach, and there's a lot of people working on it.
Yeah.
What we've tried to do, and if there's one takeaway from today I hope you get, is that what we're trying to do is architect a system that as these new technologies mature, it doesn't mean you have to throw away your airplane to get them. It doesn't mean you have to throw away everything inside the airplane. We're trying very hard to lay the foundation and the architecture to have ultimately an infinitely evergreenable or expandable aircraft, and we think that will make this aircraft very, very unique in the fleet if we can achieve that objective.
Good.
One last question, and then we're going to have to conclude for today.
Your last question comes from Jack Olcott.
Vern, the question was raised about performance envelope. What's the status of the tip tanks, and what impact have the tip tanks had on your flight envelope and your handling qualities, et cetera?
We're all done with that testing, Jack. The tip tanks actually improved the handling of the aircraft, increased our roll authority, increased our roll trim authority. We've done all the flutter testing, all the GV testing. We've done all the development testing. We're starting in on the final certification testing of that. We've hit our performance numbers, both speed and range. We flew a demonstration mission at the end of January that we went nonstop from here to Tallahassee, did the approach, did a miss. We flew the NBAA profile. We went over to Gainesville, and we landed with the prerequisite 30 minutes of fuel left on the airplane. One interesting piece of data that came out from that demonstration flight was that at 41,000 feet in long-range cruise, this aircraft achieves a better than 1 nautical mile of range per pound of fuel. And I'm not sure that any other aircraft has ever quite achieved that distinction. I'd like to thank everybody for taking your time today. And if you have any questions, certainly we're available for questions later. And I'd like to thank our partners today for taking their time and, most importantly, for being part of this program and supporting us. Thanks, guys. Good day.
Vern Rayburn is president of Eclipse Aviation. This press conference was held on Monday and has been edited slightly for length and to remove delays. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. On the web, you'll find us at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.